Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I'm Maurice O'Keefe, and you're very welcome to this edition of Voices from the Archives, the Irish Life and Lore series. In this week's podcast, we look at the Irish Gaelic nobility, those who are the descendants who survived and held on to their land down through the centuries. And you will hear in the podcast stories from the MacLeCuddies of Glenfles Castle in County Kerry, the Connors of Manch in West Cork, the O'Briens of Inchiquin in County Clare, and the O'Haras of Annamore in County Sligo. And we start with the MacDermots from Ballinadreen in County Sligo. And I first asked Madam Felicity MacDermot about the coat of arms.
Can you describe to me what they mean? You've got the three boars in one.
That's the MacDermot one, yes. Mm.
And then on the other one...
On each side, that is his... The oak tree on the right is O'Connor, and his grandmother and his great-grandmother were both O'Connors. And on the top you have Burke, Kelly, Dillon. And in fact, they married several Burkes and several more O'Connors. And that takes you back to about 1600 and something, certainly.
Okay, so there were the families. And the lines again were...
O'Rourke
family.
And here Felicity talks about her father, Alan Cecil MacDermot.
Your father was the man who took great interest in railways.
He was another MacDermot, actually. But we were not related since about 1400. His father was brought up in Boyle, and he was one of the first Catholics to be qualified as a doctor in Trinity, but there was very little employment for a doctor in Ireland at that time, and he went to England and practiced in Bath, Somerset, and that's where my father was brought up.
Now, what instilled in your father the interest for trains? Have you any idea?
I don't know. He was always interested in railways.
He wrote that book on the Great Western Railway.
He wrote the official history of the Great Western Railway. And as a result, the family could travel first class with a third class ticket.
Your grandfather had invested heavily in the Irish railways.
Yes, he was a patriotic Irishman, and any money he made, he invested in Irish railways, which were being laid down at that time. And it was very profitable in the end, but unfortunately the Free State government confiscated them, and that was it, as regards any return.
And that was the end of any profits coming
in. Any profit, yeah. Yes. This house was shut up at the time because the old MacDermot, that would be my father-in-law now, had just died, and my husband had not returned from Malaya, where he was the rubber planter.
When was this house first built?
This house was built in 1896-8. It took 2 years to build, and the architect was James Franklin Fuller. And in fact, if you look at one of the great southern hotels down there, you can see the same design that he built. He built Ivor House and all sorts of houses all around the country. This was called Scotch Baronial, I think, and it was all hand-cut stone. There was supposed to be every stonemason in Ireland on it. And
so it must have cost. It obviously cost quite a bit to put
it
up.
Yes.
Yeah, and at the time, the MacDermots were well-to-do.
Well, he himself was Attorney General for Ireland.
Yes.
And he made his money himself on the law, it was always a profitable thing. He
and this was Hugh.
Hugh, yes.
And so he's.
He was, in fact, at the time of the famine, he was told his daughter that he remembered running round the field for joy because he'd had enough porridge for breakfast. So that he did it all himself on scholarships. He was a brilliantly clever boy. He did stand for Parliament, actually. That would have been the English Parliament for Derbyshire, but he didn't get in. He was a Gladstonian Liberal. But the Tories got in, and that was why he never became a judge, because he should have been, because he was very much preeminent in the Irish bar. It was then, as always, a political appointment.
I'm here in Sligo in Annamore House, which is an O'Hara. The seat of the O'Haras.
Yeah.
Durkin, can you tell me how many generations of the your family lived here?
Well, in this particular building, the sixth or seventh in this building as is now.
Okay. And where was the original house?
The earlier house to this one was also on this site, but between here and the stables that you've just come from, there was an earlier house again. And then the earlier castle was behind us here, behind the house.
And that so they were here in this area?
The family title would be the O'Haras of Laney, which is the plains of Laney, which would be the area stretching from here westwards towards North Mayo, basically.
And here in the hallway, you know, the other portraits, do you have any idea?
I don't. I only know Anthony O'Hara, who is a Knight of Malta. He's up there, and he was he never visited Annamore. He was the son of General Charles O'Hara, illegitimate son of General Charles O'Hara, who was also the illegitimate son of Lord Thorley and Kilmaine, who both did very well in the British Army in the day. General Charles O'Hara ended up being governor of Gibraltar, and that's his illegitimate son, who was a very good friend, childhood friend of Alexander I of Russia.
Oh, I see. My goodness.
And he never visited. There's a fascinating book about him.
Yeah.
There are letters in the family papers stating how wise it was to change religion, and that's where the comment came from, that land was more important than God.
Than God.
Yeah.
See.
But he was in touch with the family.
He never actually came.
Never
here.
Came to Ireland at all. But he was the Russian ambassador to the Knights of Malta in the Mediterranean.
My goodness. It just shows the European and the world connections, you know, with this
Irish
country.
Absolutely. So we're now in the dining room. So the most interesting person here is this guy, who's Charles the Elder. Yeah. And he was blah, 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 human Dublin. So he inherited in 1675. No, I'm getting this all wrong. Hang on.
Okay.
I should know this. He was born in 1705, but he was the best friend and benefactor to Edmund Burke. His papers are very well known and are published in various books about Edmund Burke and what have you.
Yeah.
And he was the one that's rumoured to have been offered the earldom. And he was married to the daughter. His wife was the daughter of an earl, English earl.
Yes.
At the time. And the Earl of Hyndford.
And you can see all, you know, the portraits there looking down on you.
Well, that's William and Mary.
Yeah.
Which apparently are very important to have when you change sides, having in your house, hanging up, say nothing. And these are Hamiltons from the north, and their mother was an O'Hara, and she predeceased both her husband and her sons, and that's why their portraits are down here, came back here.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's how they got.
So there's a few Hamilton portraits in the house.
Yeah. Can you tell me the size of the estate, or how many acres of land goes with the house?
The estate at the moment, split between my brother and I, is about 1,100 acres, of which I have 340, and he has the remainder. The estate, the anglicised estate, was about 22,000 acres. And then the area that is Laney, so my father being the O'Hara Prince of Laney, would have been a much larger area over which I don't suppose back then you owned the land, but you had control over and you collected taxes off and everything else. Yeah.
I'm here in Dromoland Castle, and I'm talking to Conor O'Brien,
Conor, it's an absolute pleasure to be sitting down here in your garden talking to you.
Well, I'm sorry we're stuck outside at the moment with the COVID-19, but hopefully in a few weeks settled. And we'll all be
back to
freer,
normal.
Back to normal again.
And just fill me in on your background a little bit. You know, just where does the connection come?
Well, I was born during the war in England. My father was in the Royal Air Force. He was born here in the castle, and he stayed on after the war, and I was educated in England, and I inherited the title and the position of the O'Brien in 1982 when one of my uncles died and had no children to pass it on to. So I inherited from my uncle. My grandfather had three sons. The eldest, Donna, was the 16th Baron. He died in 1968. And the 17th Baron died in 1982. And I became the 18th Baron in 1982.
You would have been in your 40s that time.
Yeah.
And that's... getting the title and having that responsibility, how did you feel about it?
Well, it was a bit of a shock. I'd been living in the Far East for 10 years before that, and when my uncle died, I left Hong Kong and came back to Ireland and took over the reins of this place, which was sort of already very much involved in legal actions and goodness knows what. So it was a very difficult period to start with, and I had to sort out those legal disagreements. And as a result of that, I've managed to start to make to work on the estate here and on the farm and the house. And the house, as you can see, is a big, big house. I inherited it completely empty, so I had to furnish and decorate it. And with the help of my mother initially, turned it into a five-star guest house.
Now, when you inherited it, you inherited all the problems as
yes,
well.
Yes, yeah, plenty of them.
Or was there inheritance tax? Did you...
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, capital acquisitions tax, it's called. Like everything. Thanks, Lucia. Like everything. So they were the sort of problems I had to start with.
Was there a danger at that time that you might lose it? Do you know?
I don't think there was a danger because it was pretty cut and dry, the inheritance, the line of inheritance. As I said, yeah. I'm very lucky. As 32nd in direct descent from Brian Boru, there are records in existence of my descent direct from Brian Boru, 32 times removed.
Well, when you ask a person to go back in their family history, I'm sure you've people have spoken to you about this loads of times. Having a background like that, it's extraordinary.
It's amazing, actually. Yeah. A lot of people don't believe it, but because they say, well, everybody's descended from Brian Boru, but and probably are, but the fact that after Brian Boru was killed, the O'Briens remained on and off as High Kings of Ireland till 1118 and as Kings of Munster and Kings of Thomond until the mid-1500s when the last Earl submitted to Henry VIII and we became... The Earls of Inchiquin and Lord Inchiquin, as opposed to Murrough, the last King of Thomond. He was the last King of Thomond in 1543, went over to Greenwich and submitted to Henry VIII.
You were brought up in England.
Yeah.
And you had this Irish heritage.
Yeah.
Where did you stand with that?
Well, obviously, I mean, having visited Ireland frequently in my youth and knowing Drumoulin Castle and whatever, I have a huge affinity for being Irish. I was born in England, so I had a UK passport. But when I came back here in 1982-83, I applied for an Irish passport, which I've held ever since. So I'm both. I'm dual nationality, if you like.
The Protestant Reformation was a religious reform movement and was introduced to Ireland at the start of the 17th century by the English administration at the behest of King Henry VIII. And as a result, many of the Gaelic Catholic nobility lost their lands and some changed their religion. This was the case with the O'Connors of Carrigafile Castle in North Kerry. And one branch of the O'Connors moved down to West Cork to a place called Manch. And that's where I met two sisters who were direct descendants of the O'Connors of Carrigafile Castle. I first spoke to Nan Connor and then later to Patience. I'm here in Manch and I'm talking to Ann Connor. And yes, I'm fascinated to hear some of the stories relating to the Connors. And to your own life, because you've lived here have you?
No, I've only been here the last 50 years or so, 60 years. I've lived next door at Carrigmore and in a little house next door at Fort Robert. It's the old ruin on the hill. Now, my father owned that and a very small house made out of the stables.
Let me take you back a stage even before that again.
Yes.
Going back to the Connors of Kerry Connors.
Yes.
Of Carrigafile.
How did they come here?
Yes.
Well, we know the Connor who was hanged by Cromwell, not roasted alive, I'm glad to say. I think he was merely hanged. The wife brought the child to Bandon and brought him up as a Protestant. Dropping the O and being no doubt very Protestant, he went to England and made a fortune. He was a merchant. That must have been Philip Connor, the father of Cornelius, I think. But though he called himself a gentleman, I don't know how he lived by his wits probably, but Cornelius the son was highly intelligent and made a huge fortune. And he came back, and I suppose all this land here was probably confiscated after all the troubles. Anyway, it belonged to a party called the Hollow Swordblade Company. I'm sure you've heard of them, have you?
Yes, indeed.
And I remember Daddy showing me the deeds of this place.
Yeah.
Parchment, of course, a lovely yellowy parchment.
Yes, but explain that to me, the Hollow Sword Company. The
sword was ground like a razor.
Yes.
No, not like a hatchet like that. It had, I presume, was worth sharpening. But anyway, it sounds pretty good. Well,
so they were here before?
They were here, but there was no house whatsoever on the place. Yeah. I believe there was one somewhere called Ballyprevan. That must have been the one that Cornelius bought. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he bought the land.
Why did he choose to buy this land?
I suppose you bought what you could and the price. And he might have felt it wouldn't be politic to go into Kerry again. You know, Connor's unpopular there, I should think, at the time. And then our neighbours across the river, the Dance of Kilcaskan, they also bought a huge chunk of land from the Hollow Sword Blade. So the Hollow Sword Blades must have got some enormous grant of land.
And they came from where originally?
They were English, of course. I presume they'd be an English engineering company. But they owned a lot of land. I suppose they didn't, you know. You chopped up Ireland rather like people selling great chunks of land in Kenya. It didn't really matter who was on it. You just pushed them around. I mean, if they cared to stay and starve, well, they could. That was that.
Those were the times. Yeah. It's lovely to be here with you. Patience, you're the descendant of the O'Connors, originally of North Kerry.
We believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so your memory would go back very far now.
Well, I'm 87, so yeah. I can remember my life.
So can you talk to me about your own memories, your young days growing up in Manch?
We didn't grow up in Manch. My father was a district justice, and we lived in Roscommon and Dublin and Mallow for a long time. And then my uncle died, I think about 1944, and it was entailed to my father. And we came to Manch. I must have been 20 plus.
Now, I'm sitting down in a room with you, which is surrounded by portraits.
And somebody counted them one day and went and told her friend in Dublin. There were 37 pictures in the room, and they wouldn't believe her. But they're miniatures and things.
Yes, lots of them your ancestries.
And connections. Do you remember the great silhouettist? What was his name? He was a Frenchman. You don't remember, obviously. But that is my grandfather, Colonel Longfield, and my great-aunt Mary, I think, being held by the hand. He's very famous. I've forgotten what his name was now. He fled the revolution. And that's my great-grandfather up above.
What was his name?
Daniel.
Oh, what were the names that followed in the Connor family?
Mainly Daniel, my Uncle Dan, my grandfather Harry Dan, my great-grandfather Dan, the man who fought the duel was Dan. Otherwise, I don't think there were any Dan's.
And coming down to your own father, this is a painting of you.
That's not my father, that's my grandfather. That's Dan, Harry Dan, the QC.
Yes. And so, but you never knew him because...
But he altered the entailment. He felt Daddy couldn't afford any more children. So he altered the entailment so a girl could inherit Manch, which I think he died in 25 or 26. Mm. I thought it was very good, but of course he didn't know there was a brother coming along. Yes. Anyway, Uncle Dan and he both joined the RFC, and I have their wings. Yes.
Oh, very good.
Yes, but Daddy was a wonderful mechanic. And he could mend the aeroplane when it came down, but he got seasick. He was a very bad lander, and Uncle Dan got him moved out of the RFC into a legal officer, so he wasn't flying. And he did that for the rest of the war. Then he'd 6 months in Cologne after the war, and then he came back and joined the Free State Army, and I know when I was born, he was legal officer in Limerick. And then he soldiered on. But of course, all the fellows who didn't go to the war had all the barrister's work when he came back. So in 1932, I think he took a DJ-ships because his father had already been made circuit judge in Cork, the first circuit judge. In Cork, and I suppose that was 23 or so. He wasn't there very long before he died.
Did he ever talk to you about the troubles, 1916, 23, 22 troubles?
Yes, he did, quite frankly. Daddy, you listened when Daddy spoke. He was very, very clever. And, of course, our Uncle George was murdered. And he didn't really speak about that. He was a cousin and married to an aunt. And he was murdered on the island in Cork.
What was your father's politics? What did he...
He was a tremendous patriot. He constantly referred to the government as the gang of ruffians now in office.
Which government?
Any government. The gang of ruffians now in office. He was patriot first. He often thought an atom bomb in Leinster House would be the best thing that could happen to anyone. It would do us all good. But
why was he so against them? Did he sense that maybe they're young? It's a young country, and no, they were trying to get their feet on the ground.
No, they were ignorant yobs, and he you know, our great uncle Arthur was the real patriot. The United Irishmen. That there we are.
He's one of the
Arthur is one of them, yes. But he wrote wonderfully. I have a good lot of his stuff. Now, that was Daddy's politics. Okay. We didn't break the connection. I don't think that worried him. But we must have our own parliament. And the parliament we got was made of rubbish.
I'm here outside Baltimore, and I'm talking to Nicholas and Rose McLicuddy. And what a story this is going to be. And it's lovely to be in your house and talking to you today. Nicholas, if I could start so with you. When you were a child growing up, you were growing up in a castle, in Flesk Castle.
Well, of course, for me, it was just my home. And it was nothing different than what I would have thought anybody else would be. It was their home. When people ask me that question, it sort of has potential overtones of maybe privilege and of living in a very unusual place. I didn't see it that way, although obviously I was very fortunate in retrospect now to know that I was living in such a building. It has a certain historical interest. I was nine, I think, when we left Flesk, because my father decided to leave and build a house over on the other side of Killarney.
Was that sold because your father was under pressure to sell it? Or?
No, well, in a sense, yes. My brother Brian was killed in 1940, died of wounds in Belgium at the beginning of the war. And my mother was very, very emotionally disturbed by this tragedy, and she felt the associations of him and Flesk were too much, really, and so she felt that she couldn't go on living there. And I suppose also Flesk was becoming a bit unmanageable, might have been another reason, which I'm only surmising. But they decided to sell and to build a house, as I mentioned earlier on, over at Ahado. Well, obviously, I mean, I felt that very proud to be part of a very old Irish family. And I mean, that I've always felt very important in my life. And it was a family that fortunately throughout the generations didn't do any bad things, as far as I'm aware of.
Any ghosts follow your family?
I don't think so. I haven't come across them anyway, any stories about them, so maybe
Rose might be able to tell me. There's no MacLicuddy ghosts anywhere.
No, way back O'Sullivan Moore and O'Sullivan Bear, he's related to O'Sullivan Moore, and one of those murdered each other, and the O'Sullivan Bear, there's a lovely bit in the Annals of the Four Masters saying he hated the night.
As a daisy.
No, he hated mankind as a daisy hates the night. The O'Sullivan Bear escaped to Spain, and Nicholas's aunt, who was English, went to a finishing school in France, and there she met the proprietress of this place was Spanish, and she married their son, and they were descended.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
From this O'Sullivan Bear.
Oh, interesting.
Well, we've come to the end of this podcast telling the story of the Irish Gaelic nobility. I hope very soon to bring another podcast telling more stories of the Gaelic nobility. And if you'd like to listen to the full interviews with any of the people you've been listening to, you can do so by going on our website. That's www.irishlifeandlore.com. I'm Maurice O'Keefe, and I look forward to bringing you another podcast soon.